Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
You're listening to The Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast with your hosts, Chet West and Bill Patterson. Here's what's on deck for this episode.
Riding a 4-game win streak, which was much needed after the malaise that happened before.
The Tigers were able to grab Kyle Finnegan from the Nationals, who you and I talked about him earlier in the...
A lot of Philadelphians like a slather of cheese whiz on their steak. That is... Tiger fans, welcome back to the Litter Box. And we've got a whole lot of news to report. First and foremost, the Tigers come in off of an off day, riding a 4-game win streak, which was much needed after the malaise that happened before, during, and after the All-Star break. So I'm going to recap that series with you all, talk about some of the positives and superlatives, and then my co-host and partner is going to give his thoughts, and then we're going to do a fairly deep dive on the trade deadline and our thoughts on that as well. So without further ado, game one, which was Monday, the Tigers won 5-1 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the story of this game, and I'm going to do it similar to hockey in terms of like a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, but I'm just going to award one pitching star to the pitcher of the game, and same thing for the batter of the game. In this one, the story is that Troy Melton, rookie Troy Melton, threw 7 scoreless innings in his second career start with his parents in the stands and beat the Diamondbacks 5-1. He was lights out. He didn't even really get in that much trouble, and when he did, he got himself out of it, and he was excellent. And I think it's positive going forward that he could be a piece that could get us meaningful innings without too much damage going forward. And that is the biggest positive since the injuries happened to Jackson Jobe, who's out for the season with Tommy John surgery. Don't even know when he'll be back next year. Same thing with now Reese Olson being out for the year with a shoulder strain. And then Casey Mize, we'll get to that in a minute, had a real rough outing in game two. So as far as hitting goes, the real story here was Dylan Dingler. He was excellent behind the plate. He was 3-for-4, generated 2 runs, an RBI, a home run, did have 1K, but that brings his average up to 279 for the year. His on base is 320 and his slug is 435. He has just been awesome. And I want to prelude that to before we dive into the trade deadline, because clearly we now have a depth of catchers at the minor league system, and you've got a catcher that essentially is in his year two. Last year was Dingler's rookie year. He's excellent behind the plate. He is second in terms of runners thrown out in Major League Baseball, and he is doing yeoman's work at the plate as well. So kudos to those two young players in game one. Game two was a 12-2 Tigers victory. Boy, oh boy, though, we've got some stories here. Story number one is that Casey Mize looked terrible. He made it 1.2 innings. He allowed 3 hits, an earned run, 3 walks, 2 Ks. But here's the problem, Chet. He threw 59 pitches and didn't even get to the second inning. And so our star of the game, pitching-wise, goes to Mr. Brant Herter, who came in, pitched 3.1 innings in relief, struck out 3, but most importantly, didn't allow any runs. The only run allowed in this game that was earned was that from Mize. So that's kind of the story here. And then as far as our batter, getting back on track was Riley Green, going 3-for-5, generating 3 runs with 3 RBIs. His average is back up to 275. And good to see him back. if Riley could ever avoid these cold spells or streakiness, he is truly a superstar that this team can build around, and it was great to see him back. As far as the final game, that was a 7-2 Tigers victory. And what we want to highlight here in terms of our stars is the fact that not only was it a sweep, but we had one of the newest Tigers, Chris Paddock, formerly of your Minnesota Twins, come in and he pitched 6 innings. He only allowed 1 run, 3 hits. That run was earned, struck out 5. But here's the thing. He was throwing first pitch strikes and he didn't walk anybody. So he fits the Tigers starting pitcher mold for that. And he is the one that I am going to give the star to. If I did have to paint negativity, it would be that Tommy Cannelly still isn't right. He came in to finish this off in the 9th inning, allowed 2 hits, a run, which was earned, K'd one, and allowed a monster home run. So I still have concerns about Tommy Cannelly going forward. We'll talk a little bit about that more later because that has been addressed. And the star for our hitters would be that of Kerry Carpenter. Welcome back, Carp. He went 2 for 3. He walked once. He had 2 hits and generated 3 RBIs and had a home run. So that was really good to see. The other guy that's back that has played meaningful innings thus far is Andy Ibanez, and he's up because Parker Meadows was injured and is now on the 10-day injured list. Parker wasn't hitting. That's been well documented on this pod. Hopefully this rest does him well. I am very dubious on this. I think Parker Meadows is what we've seen. He is a plus center fielder defensively. He is a complete and total liability at the plate, save the last 4 to 5 weeks of last year. That's all we got. So, Chet, your thoughts on that?
So I was really happy to see that we swept. A great answer to our previous struggles. The fact that we were able to kind of pick ourselves up, come out there, beat the pus out of a team was great. What I will say what I am seeing, and I said this in the last pod, these guys have a ton of talent. Riley Green did some hitting. Carp, great to see him back. He cleared the fences. You've got Glaber still doing what Glaber does to some degree or another. We saw Cole Keith have a like huge game in the midst of this series. The key hurdle for these guys right now is consistency. And they're young. So this is going to be a factor for a lot of young players, is finding that consistency. How do they dig themselves out of an 0-for-4 game and not turn it into 2-0-for-4 games in a row or 3-0-for-4 games in a row? Do they have the ability to bounce back to some foundations within their hitting and pull a game together with a hit or two to get themselves out of the funk? And of course, like keeping the swing and miss down, not trying to press when you're playing poorly or hitting poorly and getting back in there and striking out time and time again, pressing and pressing and pressing. You see guys like Glaber, they kind of have this down path, which is why you see a more consistent result from a Glaber Torres. I think when I start looking on the pitching side of things, I mean, that could be Paddock's best outing of the season. I don't know. I have a theory I'm going to share when we get to trade deadline stuff. And that recap here in a minute on pitching. But I'll save that for a second. Tommy Cannelly came into that game the other day and did what Tommy Cannelly's been doing. This is not a solution anymore. And I think what's happened is hitters are getting used to him and they know what's coming. And when your changeup is being thrown 95% of the time and you couple it with a fairly ineffective fastball, it just creates trouble. I mean, Major League Baseball players are going to pound on that all day long. The other side of this, we saw some kind of poor starting efforts from Mize. We got the one from Paddock. I feel good about where Flaherty's been likewise lately too. So when I look at the structure of our starting rotation, I start saying, like, if Mize can figure this out, again, similar to hitters, he has to figure out how to get out of the rut and he has to figure out how to get to that next level in his game where he produces a little more consistency. We may see that from Flaherty from time to time. It makes him look up and down, but he's probably making adjustments on the fly to keep himself from being so hittable. So you see a stinker from him every once in a while, but then he's able to string two together. There's a lot of concern that I still have for this team. but I love seeing them bounce back and take those games from an Arizona team that had signaled that they were selling off, that they were getting rid of their parts. And you kind of saw that in their performance this past week. They kind of had that resigned sort of we're dead in the water look about them. They still have quite a few talented players. I mean, they aren't really rebuilding, but I think they're thinking it ain't going to happen this season, so we're going to retool. They still have Ketel Marte for the remainder of his career. They have Corbin Carroll. They have pieces in that lineup, but it was kind of fascinating to see their pitching just isn't there. And so they went out, they got some young pitching in trades. Bill, let me know when you're ready to discuss trade deadline stuff. That's about what I have for the series for this one.
Can I just add a couple thoughts real quick?
Please do.
Number one, in terms of Mize, he needs to figure out his get out pitch. The problem is when he gets behind in counts, he doesn't have that yet.
He doesn't have an out pitch.
And he's never had it as a big leaguer. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about his career when he was at Auburn to know if he had it then. I'm guessing if he was a first round pick, he did. But with the elevated batters in Major League Baseball, that's a problem. As far as Tommy Canely goes, the other thing I wanted, you were spot on with everything you shared. He keeps trying to throw the fastball to set up the changeup, and it's effective, except for the changeup has no location anymore, and it's not fooling anybody, and therefore it
is. And that's how a typical pitcher uses it, right? They're throwing a fastball and locating it, and then they throw that changeup in there, and it just throws everything off. He's like a reverse. He throws the changeup and then keeps him off balance with the occasional fastball. Which, I mean, that's a tough way to go, especially if you're not locating.
Absolutely. And so those are my final thoughts. I guess the last thing I'd say is good for the Tigers pitching staff. The Diamondbacks can hit to what you talked about. They're starting pitching, and really it was their starting pitching. Their bullpen hasn't been that bad by any metrics, but that's what did them in this year. They were sellers. They play in an uber competitive division with... Mm-hmm. You know, the Dodgers obviously being the giant in the room, and then the Padres clearly being acquirers at this trade deadline, which let's get into the Tigers' moves in the trade deadline. Because I have to, if I were a fan of any other team, I'd be a fan of the Padres for what they did at the trade deadline.
Gosh.
I mean
they mortgaged the future, didn't they? I mean, it's kind of crazy, but
given that they
made a lot of huge moves.
They did, even though they're not in first place in their division. But knowing my cousin lives out there, shout out to Eric and Whitney, and they are ecstatic for what the Padres are doing.
How much do you think, Bill, that what the Padres are doing is being dictated by how good their division is? They know to compete. To be competitive, we have to do X, Y, and Z. Or we're not going to compete in this division with the Dodgers and, you know, the likes of those San Francisco Giants. Whereas the Tigers, look at their division. They know they're going to compete. They didn't have to make a move to compete in the AL Central, right?
I think that's absolutely part of it. I think the other part of it is the Padres ownership's going through, I don't want to say shakeups, but there's some internal, external lawsuits going on between the ownership group. And I think it's a power play by who's the majority owner now, saying this is who we are. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to operate. This is how we're going to behave. And the other thing that I thought was interesting is they smelled a little bit of chum and blood in the water for the fact that the Giants pretty much liquidated their bullpen after picking up Rafael Devers to kind of kick off the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. The Giants have been pretty ice cold since then, and good for the Padres. So let's talk about the Tigers, though.
Yeah, let's get into that. So the Tigers' first moves were actually a couple days before the deadline. They picked up Paddock and Randy Dobnak from the
Twins.
From the Twins. And they gave up very little. They gave up the highest ranked prospect that they traded at this deadline was Enrique Jimenez in that deal. He's a catcher. We got a couple catchers. We got a Theron Lorenzo up there.
And he's 19 years old as well.
He's 19. He's a ball. Like we're not gonna see him for a while. He will not be on the MLB club for a couple of years down the road. We're thinking like late 2020s here, like, you know, 2029, maybe we'd see him. So I think this is kind of they got Paddock, who has struggled mightily as a Twin. I mean, just being in Minnesota, like nobody really shed a tear losing him. Randy Dobnak had kind of a season or a couple years back, he had a decent season in the pen, and he kind of was he became this endearing player on the roster, sort of like a Chafin or a Jake Rogers for us with the mustache. Dobnik's kind of a character. It was kind of bandied about that he was an Uber driver. It's like one day he's driving an Uber and the next day he's pitching for the Twins in the majors. So it was kind of a story, you know, that fans sort of glommed onto, an endearing character for fans to cheer for, to kind of pull in for him. Now he's past those days and his effectiveness has been less and less. Unfortunately, outside of maybe one other player, that is where the real impact stops. And that's not really even that great. I'll get to the best guy that we got. But
so Charlie Morton from the Orioles doesn't excite you, Chet?
Does not excite me at all. I'm going to talk about him toward the end. First, the next move they made was they picked up Rafael Montero from the Atlanta Braves. Rafael Montero is 34 years old, a right-hander, comes over from Atlanta. He won a World Series a few years back. I believe it was 2022 when he was with Houston. I mean, I feel like who doesn't win a World Series with Houston? It was like everybody that got traded was like, well, he won a World Series with Houston. Rafael Montero has some strikeout pitch in him, okay? He's got some swing and miss. Unfortunately, he struggles to find the plate. He has massive control issues. There's going to be a theme here outside of the fact that all these guys are old and just about washed, and many of them were probably going to be designated for assignment if they did not get traded to the Tigers. The one theme I'm going to say is maybe Fetter can work some magic with a few of these guys.
Tigers pitching coach, Chris Fetter.
Yes, Chris Fetter. Maybe Chris Fetter can work some magic with a few of these guys. Maybe our ballpark dimensions when playing at home will help some of the metrics for some of these players. That is what I kind of feel like. If you look at any of these guys, the one thing you'll say is, well, you know what? Their metrics have got to improve somewhat coming to Comerica Park because it is a pitcher's park. So maybe they're looking upside this whole entire time. Look, the other side of this is maybe there is some good pitching left in a few of these guys' arms. Maybe Fetter can get these things. Do you want a guy like, what if Rafael Montero was throwing his best baseball in the first half of this season, knowing statistically that he's going to regress to a mean that is awful? I mean, maybe we see some positive regression out of this. I don't know.
Let me play the other side of this. Do you think we're going to miss the AA infielder Jim Jarvis that the Braves received as part of the Montero trade? Okay.
No, I don't think Jim was ever going to end up being anything. I just don't. You know, I look at some of the guys we got rid of. The one plus from this whole trade deadline, in my opinion, we didn't buy into the market because it was an expensive market for relievers.
Padres, Mets, and Yankees, and Phillies really drove up the market.
They drove the market, and they paid the price on a lot of guys.
And when a team like the Giants that are still, I think, more so in it than a lot of the teams that were buyers, looking at you, Anaheim Angels of California, that tells me that the smart organizations, which I consider the Giants to be one, mm-hmm. And I'm quickly doing my 180 from the last pod to this pod, stating that I think Scott Harris knows what he has. He wasn't going to give up on the top 10 prospects. And he's getting rentals and he's getting guys that are probably, you know, on the wrong side of 30 that aren't really going to excite the fan base, but it might be enough. It was a smart gamble.
It may be enough to fill holes. And it is, at the end of the day, you're dumpster diving. You're shopping in the value section of the store. But if a couple of these guys, if even two of these guys can successfully fill a hole, you're going to get something down the stretch from it. Does it get us to a World Series? Unfortunately, we don't win the dang World Series this year. Everybody's going to say Scott Harris needed to do more at the deadline. That's basically the situation we're in. If he loses in the first round, they're going to say didn't do enough at the deadline. If he loses in the AL Central, you know, in the AL championship game, then he didn't do enough at the deadline. If he loses the World Series, they're going to say, we got all the way to the World Series. Just think what we could have done if we had had Mason Miller or if we had had, and he's going to get skewered by a certain section of the fan base. It's never going to be the trade deadline that's going to win you the World Series. There's so many hurdles to cross prior to that.
I agree with your last statement. And I still think stay the course, given the prices paid. I'll be real curious to see if the Padres actually do get over the hump, to see if the Mets get over the hump. And knowing that there's going to be a labor dispute in all likelihood at the end of 2026 when the current contract's up, this whole outlook could be reset in a very, very different way for all of Major League Baseball. And maybe the Padres and Mets and Phillies look smart at that time, or they might be left holding empty bags with empty farm systems.
It's very possible.
In a new world where there's a salary cap, and it could be very possible. It could hamstring them. Going forward, let's talk about Paul Sewald, who was received from the Guardians after Montero. Hold on. Wait, can I say
Suarez came off the board?
Yes, but can I just go ahead? Yeah,
Go ahead.
No, Paul Sewald was traded for cash, which is awesome. I love when guys are traded for cash. It means just take our problem on the IL. He's been on the 15-day, basically the whole season with a right shoulder strain. He went on in late April, and it's like, just take him off our hands and pay his salary.
If we had traded Alex Cobb.
Exactly.
Or something. Well, it would have been, okay, we got $500,000 for Alex Cobb. Like, I don't know what the cash consideration came out in the Sewald deal. The guy is in his upper 30s, 35 years old. He has done nothing this year, but we ended up taking him on, and I don't know what role he's going to fill. I see him and like Alex Cobb having drinks together on the IL, just hanging out, talking about how I can't believe we're still getting a contract from somebody. I think he would have been DFA'd is what I think would have ended up happening.
A common theme you're going to state here. Yeah. Do you think if the Tigers do go to the World Series, and let's say it's lopsided against, like, say, the Padres or the Dodgers, and it's like the 2001 Subway Series between the Yankees and Mets, when Ricky Henderson and Bobby Bonilla in their twilight years they couldn't even be bothered to be on the bench for the final game. They were in the clubhouse playing cards. Is that going to be Alex Cobb?
It could be. I mean, are they going to be in street clothes? Are they just going to be in a suite somewhere hanging out? I don't know. I mean, I think that, so what I was getting at, though, was like, after we made this humongous move to grab Rafael Montero, and everybody's going, oh my gosh, we're seriously going to dumpster dive through this trade deadline. Eugenio Suarez gets traded, makes this massive thud in Tiger fandom the world, and everybody's like, we're really not going for it. We just let the Mariners get Eugenio Suarez back when they dumped him for cat, you know, to save money, and then they went and traded back for him. They gave up their number 9 prospect, and everybody wanted to sit there and say, oh, well, that was Max Anderson for us. We would have happily given up Max Anderson for him. You know what? The Diamondbacks didn't want Max Anderson. They don't need a second baseman. They have Ketel Marte. They have other guys that are playing these positions. They're going to be there forever. They wanted a first baseman. We don't have a first baseman to give up at this point for a 2-month rental of Eugenio Suarez. First base is, I mean, we had to convert Cole Keith into first base because Torkelson, we weren't sure on him. So it's like, who are you going to give up for Suarez that another team will take? Well, this Freeland guy for Seattle, who's their number 9 prospect, the first baseman, he looked a lot better to them. It takes 2 to tango. Like, we can offer our number 9. It doesn't mean that the Diamondbacks want our number 9. They may have wanted somebody in our top 5, and I would not have agreed to trading maybe Theron Lorenzo, maybe. But if after Theron Lorenzo, we have nothing in the till for catcher beyond, like, you know, we got Dingler, that's fine. Jake Rogers, I don't know what his future's like. What do you do? So I would rather hang on to Lorenzo a little bit and see if he can reach that peak performance, maybe. Eugenio Suarez also not a guy, and we talked about this, that I think was going to get him over the hump. So I'm glad we didn't pay up, because that's what we would have had to do, is pay up above what the Mariners were paying, which would have been one of those top 5 guys. And I think we would end up disappointed. I will be very curious to see what Suarez's stats are going on this season. They also gave up 3 pitchers from their prospect pool, which is never cheap to give up that much pitching. I mean, the chance that one of those arms pans out, it's probably pretty good. And then you've got, you know, you've lost a lot of the value of the 2-month rental of Suarez, in my opinion.
Well, can I talk about the Mariners? Yeah, real quick. Just because I think the team sometimes also, you know, we're looking at it is the player aspect, but let's also talk about the team. They're still 4.5 games out behind the Houston Astros, who I think you and I collectively both agree the Astros, it's their division to lose, regardless of what they did and didn't do. Here's the thing, is the Mariners aren't even a lock right now to make the playoffs. If I'm looking at this, they still sit behind the Yankees, Red Sox, and then they're only a game in front of the Rangers. And so it was very aggressive for a team that isn't in the position that, say, the Padres are. The Padres are only 3 games behind the Dodgers and are already at 60 wins, which means, again, I don't know that they're a shoe-in, but they're in the playoffs right now as it speaks. So are the Mariners, and I guess they're both the last teams in, so the similarities are probably more present there. That being said, let's keep talking about trade deadline acquisitions for our Detroit Tigers.
So next up on the list was something a little more impactful, and it took a little while for this to formulate, but the Tigers were able to grab Kyle Finnegan from the Nationals, who you and I talked about him earlier in the season when the deadline was being kind of bandied about, and we were starting to talk about moves that would make sense. And I think we were playing the Nats that week, and we saw Finnegan pitching, and we liked him. We thought, hey, you know, this is a guy that may fit at the back end of our bullpen. I don't know that Finnegan is like this lights-out closer that we were all hoping for or expecting. I think it's seen that he could be closing games in tandem with Will Vest at times. I don't think Will Vest is going to lose his closer role, but Finnegan is by far probably the single best player we acquired at this deadline, at least from a statistical standpoint, at least from an age standpoint. He's not up there at 35 years old, but we ended up dealing our number 15 prospect, or some outlets have him as a 15 prospect, Josh Randall, who's a right-handed pitcher. And we also dealt away a guy by the name of RJ Sales, who's not even in our top 30. He was a right-hand pitcher. So we didn't have to give much. I mean, depending on how you look at it, Enrique Jimenez was somewhere around 15 or 16 in our prospect pool, and Randall was somewhere around 15, 16 in our prospect pool. So those are the two biggest prospects we traded away at this deadline, and they aren't even close to the top 10. So they're outside of it in the teens. So we didn't have to give that much up. Will Finnegan be impactful? I think he'll be a good addition. I think he'll be better than a lot of what we got. I think he'll be better than Canley as a setup guy. That's for certain.
He'll take
that role that Canley's been struggling so much in.
Yeah, he can at least occupy that role until Canley gets right, if he gets right. My only fear about Canley is he is 35, and I think it's the twilight of his career, not the time that he is probably going to reinvent himself.
The funny thing about this, Bill, is Finnegan, by the way, isn't a young guy by any stretch. I said he wasn't 35. He's 33.
I know.
So we still took another guy past 30. He's cheap. He's on a $6 million deal that we have to pay out. So it's like, it just fits this cheap dumpster diving mode, yet this is still the best thing we picked up.
And interestingly enough, he was a free agent target of the Tigers in the offseason, and it didn't come to fruition. So we'll see about that.
I'm fine with it. It was a nice deal. It's not something incredible that I'm going to go crazy over.
And last but not least, we'll talk a little bit about Cody Hauer being picked up by the Tigers for cash considerations again from the Rangers. I will be surprised what happens if he does anything here. Again, the price was right. The Tigers had money to spend, their payroll. One thing we do need to give Scott Harris and company credit on is they have not absorbed bad contracts. The only bad contract this team has right now is potentially Javier Baez, and that's not as bad as some others. Looking at your Minnesota Twins trading Carlos Correa and basically eating $33 million so he can just go be an Astro because they're trying to get money off the books. I don't expect a whole lot from Cody Hauer. If we get anything out of him, great. I already would say the Chris Paddock deal was a success just for how he pitched Wednesday. Again, to your point, it might be the best we see him. And if that is...
Hey, we got one win out of him.
If that is, then so be it. So looking forward... Is there anything else you'd like to add before I...
Oh, we still have a few things we have to touch on here, Bill.
Yeah.
You're forgetting the old Charlie Morton deal. Charlie Morton deal caused some ripple effect. So let's talk about that real quick. You know, Charlie Morton, we dealt away a guy by the name of Micah Ashman for Charlie Morton, again, another guy that's, you know, down the list a ways. Okay. Not a guy that we're reading about. I'm sure, you know, he'll end up being an all-star someday and spur us all to anger. But Charlie Morton is, he's in his, he's
41.
I'm 41 years old. I don't really get this move. But the result of the signing is they had to clear 40-man space. So Matt Manning gets bounced off the 40-man, designated for assignment, and subsequently traded. This is Matt Manning, who was one-time top 100 prospect. Showed some promise in his career at one point in time for about a season. We thought we might get something from him. He's had some injury stuff. He's been sent down. He struggled this year down at the farm, down at AAA. And so they DFA'd him to make room for the 41-year-old, former top 100 prospect, former top pitching prospect. They then traded him at the deadline to the Philadelphia Phillies. So Matt Manning, so long. You're now going to be a Philly and probably end up an all-star in the next couple seasons. I don't know. I mean, wouldn't that be a bite? You look at that whole chain of events and it's sort of saddening because I really thought Manning was a guy that was going to come along and pitch for us at some point in time and find and regain his form. Not to be. Not to be. So he goes to the Phillies. And guess who is on deck for your beloved Tigers for their next series?
Philadelphia Phillies.
Philadelphia Phillies. And it's going to be a doozy of a series, I'm sure. We may be changing our tune. And coming off of the week trade deadline where everybody is skewering the Tigers and Scott Harris right now for dumpster diving. I mean, every single article is considering the Tigers as losers after the trade deadline. What do we have to look forward to in Philadelphia, Bill?
Well, let's talk about that. So tonight we've got Jack Flaherty on the bump against Ranger Suarez. That clearly favors the Phillies. Ranger Suarez is having an excellent season. He's 8-4 with a 2.59 ERA. He's a lefty. And then tomorrow night, hopefully it's a get right game, but that's doubtful as well because we've got Skubal on the mound, but he's going up against Zach Wheeler. Yeah. Who's 9-4 with a 2.56 ERA. That is going to be the Fox game of the afternoon at 3:05. Just for planning purposes, Tiger fans. And then we are back on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, and that is going to be Troy Melton up against Christopher Sanchez. And again, I don't know what to expect on this, but Sanchez has been lights out as well, 9-3 with a 2.55 ERA. So it's going to be a tough series, and I will say this, Citizens Bank Park is one of my favorite ballparks to visit in all of Major League Baseball, and per our usual, or my usual shtick, I'm going to give you a little bit of food. We know that Philadelphia is infamous for its cheesesteaks. My suggestion is you do not get one at the ballpark. It's Tony Luke's or Charlie Manuel's or Uncle Charlie's steaks. They're both garbage. You're better off getting one outside of the ballpark, either at Pat's, Geno's, or our favorite. And this is a shout to my son, Grady Patterson. Campo's is the best cheesesteak we've found. If you're in Camden, you can also go to Donkey's across the river, which is lovely as well. If you are going to eat at the ballpark and don't heed my advice, the best thing that you can get is Bowls Barbecue, and that would be Greg Luzinski, who is there often. And Chet, this is something.
At Bowls Barbecue?
Oh, yeah. He does a burnt end cheesesteak, a smoked turkey sandwich, ribs, and then he does the kielbasa bulldog. It's fantastic. It's got coleslaw and baked beans on it. And the best part is the bowl Luzinski's there, so you can get him to sign cards, merch. He'll have a beer with you. And wow. I didn't know this, but Campos, it does have a steak stand in the stadium. So you do have a good steak able and ready for you when you're visiting Philadelphia.
What makes a good Philly cheesesteak, Bill? Because I'm curious about this because I've had them. I like them. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know that I could discern between a good and a bad one.
I think the key thing is going to be your bread. It's got to be fresh bread. It's got to be crusty on the outside, chewy on the inside. There are numerous bakeries that do it really, really well in Philadelphia. I'm not that much of an expert, but I think D'Amato's is kind of the favorite.
Okay.
With that, then it's going to be you know, how good your steak is, you know, how thin you shave the ribeye. Do you do that frozen before you put it on the skillet? What your onion to cheese ratio is. And then I think it's what cheese you use. A lot of Philadelphians like a slather of cheese whiz on their steak. That is not the preferred way. It's a little too sticky, too glue-like for my taste. So I prefer either provolone, or my favorite would be a white cheddar. And again, it's just going to come down to the quality. What I always suggest if you're looking for a good
quality of the cheese or the quality of the meats, what's more important there?
I would say all the above. So it's like any other deli sandwich. And why Campos is so great is like they use their grandma or Nona's recipes for just about everything.
Okay.
And you can also just get a regular hoagie there, you know, just an Italian sandwich, and taste the quality of that as well. So I would say those are the differentiators.
I think I would follow your advice and go have the Philly cheesesteak outside the ballpark somewhere and hit the Bulls barbecue, Lozinski's barbecue. I like that you gave everybody that option, because a lot of people are going to go to the game, like, I got to get a Philly cheesesteak, and then they're going to have it and they're going to be like, wonder what all the rage is when they didn't go over the outside, over the river, wherever, and grab one where they could have got a really, really good one. And so I like that you gave options along those lines and kind of warded people off of making a mistake and on their eating.
I'm a big Greg Lozinski fan. I mean, that he's there when we get our social media set up. I've got a really good photo of he and I and a coworker all having a beer, and he's got like
he played baseball at a time when fitness was not at the top of players' concerns.
Absolutely.
He was a big boy.
Well, still is a big man or a large man, and running a barbecue stand in Philly is so on brand for him. It's amazing. That being said, do you have any other questions about Citizens Bank? Because I do have a correction to make from our last pod.
Yes. No, I'm going to let you do this correction. This is critical. We got called out for this one, and we try to give you guys facts, get as close as we can. We're hobbyists, but I'm good on Citizens Bank. I know what I need to know about the eating situation, which is important. Go ahead and do your correction.
In finishing on the weekend series, if they win 2 of 3, I would be over the moon. I just hope they don't get swept. So the correction is, I mentioned Frank Tanana being the high ticket trade item in 1987. I did get the record right, but I got the player wrong. It was Doyle Alexander that went 8-0 and was the John Smoltz trade. It was not Frank Tanana. Frank Tanana was already part of the Tigers at that point.
Thank you for that correction.
Yep, that is the
always
correction.
Right in the world now with our facts.
Please, everybody sleep easy with that. And
sleep easy.
Yeah. We will get back to you post-Philly series. And then beyond that, we've got a set with the Twins. Hopefully, the Tigers can just take the division in August. A lot of series against the Royals, who are also buyers, which baffles
such
me.
Such an oddity, right? The Cleveland Indians sell, the Royals buy. The Twins just blew up their team.
They want
to. The White Sox didn't really have anybody to give away. Shocking. I didn't see Luis Robert move. Did he move?
I don't believe he did. Let me fact check that.
Shocking.
Yeah.
So you got, I mean, you're looking at just the decimation of the AL Central for the most part, but then the Royals decide to be annoying and buy a few pieces.
Well, we'll see. What was super annoying is they extended Seth Lugo.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that really disappointed me is I was praying that Stephen Kwan. Not that I thought he'd get traded. I just didn't want him. I didn't want him in the division anymore. You know, I love him and have
that
a man
was
crush.
The upside of it, right? Like that was going to be the upside. Is Stephen Kwan was going to be gone, but he didn't get traded.
He's a Tigers killer. So with that,
we did get Shane Bieber out though. Yeah, with that.
Well, Shane Bieber, who hasn't pitched outside of the minor leagues on rehab assignments since Tommy John, his best year was 2020. So I don't. Yeah. He's not the killer that he once was.
Not the killer he once was.
Yeah. With that, we'll let you be. Tiger fans, let's hope that this is really the last tough series until September. Yep. So let's hope for the best for the Tigers. And
I'd like to win a game, to be honest. I'd be happy with a game win. One win.
Come on, Scooble.
Don't get swept.
Just beat Zach Wheeler or Melton. Show up again.
We'll need to have that defeatist attitude, but we need one win out of this.
Just one win.
And I'll be
all
okay.
Right. Talk to you. All right.
that's going to do it for this episode of the Litter Box, a Detroit Tigers podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us. We're Bill and Chet. We'll be back soon with more Tigers talk. If you're enjoying the show, be sure to follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if you got a minute, leave us a quick review. Till next time, go Tigers.